This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
This is Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for the LGBTI community, taking you around the globe one country at a time. A big thank you to the Informer team and Richard for bringing us the latest local news. On the Worldwide Wave panel tonight, we have Will.
Hello.
Damien.
Hi.
Matt.
Hello.
And I'm Sarah. In 2010, this country's Pride Parade came under attack from anti-gay protesters, leaving more than 100 injured. Last year, just 7 years later, the country's open lesbian prime minister joined an incident-free Pride March. Times seem to be changing very quickly in Serbia.
What is it like coming from Serbia to find your way and a new life in Australia?
How do Serbian families react when a family member comes out?
Does having an openly lesbian prime minister impact public acceptance of LGBTI people? Giving us an insight into the exciting changes of a country at the crossroads of Europe, tonight we're joined in the studio by Vera Ignatovic, a Serbian-born scientist who calls Australia home. To set the scene, here's how Radio Free Europe reported on Serbia's Pride March last year.
Organisers hope photos of the violence and injured participants from previous year's events will help raise awareness. They said that while there has been more acceptance in Serbia recently, discrimination and violence against the LGBT community is still a regular occurrence. Last year, the Pride Parade was held without incident. The event was safeguarded by about 5,000 police officers.
Hi, this is Janne, Mr. Gay Finland, and you are listening on the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Samo malo, malo li te tako
ću jako, malo bite samo nako, samo malo, malo bite tako, malo neću jako.
Tonight, we are speaking with Vera Ignatovich. This music has been chosen by her. So, Vera, who was that singing then?
So, this was Magnifico, and the song was called Samo Malo.
Great. As always, you can always call us in on 0427JOY949. And we are talking with Vera tonight. She is a Serbian-born Australian. She's a scientist. She works in kids and hematology and thrombosis. She's also a Olympian. And, yeah, has a good story to tell us tonight.
Hopefully, yeah.
An Olympian as well, I didn't know.
Yeah.
What was your sport? Because we're all intrigued.
Yes, so I played handball, or European handball as it's more commonly known in Australia.
So we're going to start off tonight with your childhood. And what was it life like for you when you first came to Australia as a child?
So I think it was quite tough. I think that I certainly wasn't the only, you know, migrant in the school, but everything was really different. The environment was different, the setup in the school was different, the classes were different. But I must say that what made it easy for me was that was basically it. There was no going back, and the fact that also the school that I went to had English as a second language helped a lot. So I think within 3 months I was pretty good in terms of English.
Oh, wow.
I mastered English, and I could actually communicate with my classmates, which was fantastic.
Do you have many other Serbians in your school?
Not really. There were a couple of Croatians, and that was an interesting experience as well, but let's not go into that.
But, yeah. I was just going to ask you to remind us of that situation, but yeah, obviously there was a fair bit of conflict among the region at the time, so yeah.
So we actually moved, my family moved out just before the conflict, just before it all happened, and we had no idea that it was going to happen, but I think there were things that kind of ran deep over a long period of time, so that was clearly a visible here amongst the people who have been living here for a long time. And that's also the environment that's really interesting. After having been in Australia for 30 years, I think that I probably think a little bit differently compared to people in Serbia. I might be a little bit more attached to Serbia compared to some Serbians within Serbia. So, yeah.
So as our listeners can get a little bit of an understanding of what the region's like. Now, I remember Yugoslavia in the 1970s, and that was one region, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
And now that's now divided up into Serbia and
Croatia and Bosnia and Herzegovina and Slovenia and Macedonia and so on. So it was in kind of an interesting situation, and I mean, interesting war is not interesting, but I think it was almost like Australia and the different states within Australia, and then the states splitting up, kind of a thing.
Okay. So you guys moved in 93, was it?
No,
88. Yeah. And your father came with a engineering visa, you know, working visa, engineering. So did you prepare before you came? Were you trying to learn some English?
Oh, yeah, this is, so the English that we learned, so my brother and I were forced to spend 2 hours every day in the middle of the summer whilst everyone else was outside playing. We were forced to listen to BBC records of English, so you can imagine that. So it wasn't very useful at all, and we kind of hated the experience. All we could think about was just getting outside and playing with our friends, yeah.
Sort of two parts to this question, and hopefully it's not too personal, but why did you and your family leave Croatia?
Serbia.
Serbia. Terribly sorry. There is several. And what made you choose Australia?
Oh, so it's basically, that is also an interesting story. So we traveled a little bit around Europe. We had a caravan, and my parents traveled a lot. I mean, I was young at the time, but I guess my parents were thinking that the opportunities for myself and my brother were limited to who we knew, who my parents knew, and the contacts, and because there was a little bit of corruption, there still is a little bit of corruption there as well. And my father was thinking, regardless of whether we are, you know, I finish up as a hairdresser or a doctor, I will still, or we will still be reliant on who we know. And he wanted to get us out of that environment. So, you know, they were very brave. My father was 42 at the time and my mom was 38. Without any knowledge of English, they decided to type two letters on a typewriter, one to the Canadian embassy, one to the Australian embassy. And the Australian embassy responded quite quickly, and within 6 months we had a visa to Australia. So that was the story. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And so you talked about, you know, the differences between Serbia and Australia. Do you remember seeing anything about gay people when you were growing up in Serbia or when you got to Australia?
Not at all. Not in Serbia, certainly not. There was, nobody spoke about that. I think I was, you know, I wasn't aware of it until I was about 15. So after about 2 years spent in Australia, I started to realize that I was having some feelings and that maybe, you know, it's time to kind of let people know. So I spoke to my mom and she just thought it was a joke. She thought it was funny. She actually laughed when I told her, and she said to me that, oh, this is really common, you know, girls are more attracted to girls because of basically the intellect, because boys,
hey.
But boys apparently develop a little bit slower. That was her story, and she said it's a phase. And yeah, and
so have you found one that's grown up enough yet for you, or?
No. I waited for the phase to go away for about 10 years, and I really tried to be straight. So that's interesting. The photos back from that time and people who knew me at the time, I think, will know that that certainly was not me.
So you basically, although you kind of identified with the LGBTIQ label, you didn't embrace that identity until much later.
Yes, so I think that was not really an option, although within sports, so when I started playing sport, and I played basketball as well, so I kind of started to see some kind of opportunities there. And I guess for me that was, I just thought I will just do it on the load, so to say. I didn't really have many people that I knew who were gay. In fact, within my environment outside of sport, I did not know any gay people at all.
So you're saying sport was actually a positive space for you to explore being LGBTI?
Hugely, hugely positive. So I think my parents blame handball probably for me. And I know that they did at a certain point in time. We haven't spoken about it in a long time, about handball and me being gay. But yeah, they certainly at some stage blamed Australia, and then they blamed handball. And then I think once they realized, you know, this is it, this is who I am, I think they finally kind of settled.
They wrap their head around it. That's, you know, my mind's just blown, because sport's always kind of been the one that is called out for hiding and suppressing, and one of the last kind of arenas to come around. But for you, it was actually the arena that helped you explore your identity and embrace it.
Yeah.
So there are positive stories amongst it all.
Yes, I think so. And I think it's, I have to say that I think it's easier for female sport. And, you know, it's not that, it depends which country, you know, people come from. And, for example, with the Norwegian handball team and the Danish handball team, you know, there's nothing hidden. And it was interesting because even with the Australian handball team, when we played at the 99 World Championships in Norway, and our guide was Norwegian, and she said, her statement was, oh, this Australian team, you know, it's interesting, no one is gay and no one smokes. They didn't know that there were gay people in our team, but nobody was really open enough to kind of come out and make a statement at that point in time. And then afterwards, I think about 2 or 3 years after that, it was kind of interesting because it was like as though floodgates were open and all of a sudden half the team was gay. Yeah.
Wow. And what kind of era was this that we're looking at?
So this was 1999, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think there were people that were comfortable certainly around teammates, but not outside of the external environment.
Was anyone in the team publicly out?
I will say no.
How about the time of the Sydney Olympics, which I think you also went to with that team, right?
Yeah. So at that time, there were already a couple of girls who were openly, you know, who were out. And that was, by that time, everything was different. And I think it was interesting because we got to experience staying at the same hotel with the Danish and the Norwegian handball team and kind of seeing the other side of the story. So the complete, you know, being out and comfortable with the fact that people were gay.
Oh, fabulous stories. Yeah. We'll pick this up in a moment. We're talking to Vera Ignjatovic tonight.
On the World Wide Wave, where we ventured off to Serbia.
Hi, this is Tamás from Happier Society, fighting for the human rights of the LGBTQI community in Hungary on the World Wide Wave.
welcome back to World Wide Wave. We're here for your questions and comments. Tonight we're talking to Vera from Serbia, and we're listening to some Serbian music. What was that one?
So this was the Fraile, and the song is called Srce Moje.
And as always, you can message us in on 0427JOY949, just like Alberto did from Northcote. Very funky music.
We're glad you like it.
Now, Vera, you mentioned that you came to Australia at the age of 13, and it wasn't till you were around 15 years of age you just started to discover your sexuality, which is obviously a very normal age. So you really had no perception of what the gay community, the gay scene was like in Serbia, clearly because you were too young to identify it. No doubt you've been back to Serbia and the region in recent years. How do you view the gay scene and LGBTI rights in Serbia today?
Yes, so I think the situation has changed quite a bit, and especially I would say in the last probably 10 years. I think if you go to places like Belgrade, so the capital, there is a gay scene and there are gay bars and so on. I think in the smaller cities it's a little bit more hidden, but also in Belgrade it all comes down to whether people feel comfortable and whether people feel safe basically being out. And it's you very much, you know, you don't know who you're going to come across. But for example, you know, I've been back to Serbia almost every year, and I would not feel comfortable holding hands with my partner, and I would not feel comfortable. Oh, I would especially not feel safe with my two kids and, you know, and my partner in kind of a gay, openly gay, you know, basically being openly gay with a partner and with my two kids. I would not feel safe.
So there's clearly some problems at a social or a community level. Yeah. So that begs the question, what's it like at a political level? Our community starting to get rights there. Are we going forward in Serbia?
Yes, I think we are, and I think we are moving forward with the assistance of the NGOs. But then at the same time, the NGOs are not viewed upon as favorably, because you have to understand that a lot of things in Serbia are divided into us and them. And it has always been like that, whether it is that someone has, you know, red hair or someone wears glasses and so on. It's always there is kind of the norm and what the majority of people do versus something else. And I think what the problem is that LGBTIQ has been viewed, the community has been viewed as something that has been brought in by someone.
Like the Western import. Yes.
So that's what it is. The problem. So it's not, this is not us.
It's not ours.
Yeah, no, it's
We've
not.
We've been infiltrated.
Yes, which is really interesting, because in 2003 I was playing at the World Championships representing Australia, and we were in the same group with Serbia and a couple of other countries, but Serbia especially, and we were sharing the hotel, sharing a few other things, and I know for a fact that there were women in that Serbian team who were gay. Now, whether they were openly gay, I don't think that they were, because then the comments that I had when I went back to Serbia straight after that World Championships were, you know, not in relation to me, but in relation to the conversation, and when it happened is, oh yeah, there are no gay people in Serbia, and we are watching these women play handball on TV at the same time. And I was just thinking, but no, this is not true. You know, it's actually not
lies,
true.
Lies.
Yeah.
It
must be like Russia. They don't have any either.
Well, it's, I don't think it's maybe as bad, especially now, and I guess that, you know, it will be brought up eventually, the fact that we now have a lesbian prime minister, openly lesbian prime minister, and see, even the word lesbian prime minister in Serbia doesn't really roll off my tongue, but it is a reality, and I think it's something that people don't really talk about so much. They certainly did when she became the prime minister. They don't really talk about it now. They kind of talk about the work that she's doing, and they kind of try to skip over that if they can. I think so. A lot of people are kind of saying, or not interested in what her life is like outside of the office. But I think a lot of people are interested, but actually don't feel comfortable talking about it, don't feel comfortable admitting that Serbia is in that position.
Well, I think, yeah, she also wants it to be a professional kind of situation, which I'm sure you know, previous female prime ministers would all have liked much more. So the idea that they're not talking about that, yeah, in some ways is excellent.
Yeah, it's a bit of can't have it both ways, right? So if they're not talking about it, that's a plus in that they're not seeing the prime minister's role as an issue about sexuality, which it's not. So that's great. But then the flip side of that is that maybe the country does need to be talking a little bit more about sexuality, because ignoring it completely is obviously not going to move things forward either. So it's a bit of a hard one of heads I win, tails you lose, because you know, which way you kind of can't win that one.
Well, I imagine, you know, if everyone thinks there's no gay people in Serbia, this is something that everyone's not talking about, right? So there must be family members who people think are gay, or it's just never talked about, they just never marry.
Yes, so and that there are certainly, almost everyone has an auntie or an uncle that has never been married and doesn't have children, and that is quite common. And it was interesting because my 96-year-old grandma, who is no longer alive, but when she was 96, she basically said to me, because I went to Serbia with my girlfriend at the time, and she just said, don't listen to what anyone says, just be yourself. She could not read and write, but this is a statement that she made. So she clearly knew something, and it was really interesting because, she came from the village, she came from the environment where she didn't learn how to read or write. She didn't really, there was nothing on TV that she could have watched. So she had some kind of inside knowledge.
Yeah.
She should have been the person that had, I guess, the most archaic views, but in fact, instead of, coming out with something that you would have expected, she perhaps surprised you with something that was so liberal, but so honest and so insightful.
Yes, she definitely surprised me, and I think it took me a few days to process that information.
Like, did she just say that?
Yes, exactly. And once I spoke to my mom, she said, "Oh, look, your grandma was very much underestimated by everyone because she couldn't read or write." So yeah, she was very, very intelligent.
Wow. Yeah.
With all these changes in Serbia, with a prime minister who's openly gay but isn't talking about it, and she said she doesn't want to push for LGBT rights, for marriage, I think is actually what she said, not rights. Do you feel hopeful about the future or...
Oh, definitely. So I think that the situation will change even in the next 5 years. What I'm hoping is that people realize that it's not just, everybody's kind of touching the surface in Serbia. It is very much about, for a lot of people, it's very much about what people wear, what kind of clothes they wear. You know, everybody's wearing similar things, similar brands and labels and things like that. And I think that with time and as the economic situation hopefully improves, I think that people will realize that that is really not so important.
Yep. If LGBTI is so off the radar and not part of the mainstream and it's viewed as so different, how on earth did Serbia end up with a prime minister that was openly lesbian?
I think it's her qualifications, and I think, and again, a lot of people will say, well, she came in from the West, she was educated by the West, there will be comments like that. There is no doubt that that will happen, but I think she is hands down the most qualified person that was anywhere in that environment that is in that job. So I think her qualifications just speak for themselves.
That's brilliant. We're speaking to Vera Ignjacevic tonight from Serbia on the World Wide Wave, with more to come.
Hi, my name is Hope Matumbo from the Multicultural Health and Support Service, and you're listening to the World Wide Wave. That's how people do it.
Sve može da se pripitomi, ali lepši su ti divni konji. Ovo ti nije muška laž. Samo da znaš,
i noćna straža jednom zaspi, a mora i dete odrasti. Ti meni uvek pripadaš. Idu ljudi, sele laste, snogu neki te počaste. Nek sve ide, samo nemoj ti. Da straža jednom zaspi, a mora i dete odrasti. Ti meni uvek pripadaš. Idu ljudi, sele laste, snogu neki te počaste. Nek sve ide, samo nemoj ti.
Let us know, who was that by?
So this was Željko Joksimović and the song is Millimeter.
And what type of music is that?
So this music is kind of like tubo folk music. So it wasn't on my list of songs.
We randomly snuck it in there.
So it's interesting. So it's kind of like a little bit of folk music with a little bit of a twist, making it a little bit faster and trying to entertain the masses pretty much.
Yeah, fabulous. I love the idea of turbo folk. It's going to be my new only what I listen to.
Turbo folk. I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
You have now.
I have now, yeah.
You're listening to Joy. You can message us in at 0427 Joy 949 as ever. We've had a message from 560 or Alberto. Holding hands in public reminds me of Premier Daniel Andrews' speech about two guys being able to hold hands on a tram. Do we need more leaders to speak up about this?
Well, I think we do.
What do you think, Vera? Do you think if, for example, the Prime Minister was a bit more vocal about LGBTI in her role as Prime Minister, do you think that would get some traction, or how do you think that would be received, given that everyone's kind of almost ignoring the fact that she is openly LGBTI?
I think because Serbia is really divided in terms of the parties, the political parties, so it depends, you know, a lot of people that are not from from the same, or I guess she was apolitical kind of when she came onto the scene. But I think people who are not happy with the current environment, political environment in Serbia, would really not listen to anything that she says. But the hope is in the young people, and I think that is where it is at. And I think that once the singers start to come out, once the actors start to come out, I don't think that, you know, I think that then the situation will really change.
And is that starting to happen now? Are you starting to see, I guess, celebrity LGBTI people?
Well, there is, as far as I know, only one other person that is openly gay or lesbian, and she is actually the winner, previous winner of Eurovision Song Contest, Marija Šerifović. So she kind of, the song that Serbia won the Eurovision with, that was another shock, because it was very much a song about kind of gay love, I guess. And it was called A Prayer. And when you see the video, actually, and the choreography, it is really right out there, and people didn't really talk about, people talked about the fact that Serbia won Eurovision. That was about it. They didn't really mention so much the fact that the singer was gay, and she didn't come out until a couple of years later. She didn't really want to discuss it at the time, but she did.
But the song was about gay love.
I believe so. Yes. Yes.
Vera, we've had a wonderful journey walking through your life. As you said, you immigrate to Australia when you're 13. You discovered your sexuality around 15. We've also discussed what the environment is like in Serbia towards the LGBTI community. Clearly, you have a wonderful partner, and you've obviously taken your partner back to Serbia and introduced her to your family.
Yeah.
So can you walk us through that? What do you do, and how does that go, and what's their reaction?
So I have to make a correction to that. I currently do not have a partner, but I have previously taken partners to Serbia, mm-hmm. and the introductions have been with the majority of people along the lines of, this is my friend. And I think that people knew. I think, you know, they would have to be silly not to know. Of course, my friends know, and I'm open to all of my friends, but it was kind of the relatives, the older relatives, and I would say my parents' friends, or kind of family friends, that I wouldn't really, you know, I would just say it's a friend. But everybody that was kind of, you know, that is my age and my friends, everybody knows. So, yeah. So
would you explicitly introduce her to your friends as your girlfriend?
Yes. Yes.
And so depending on what company you were with depends on how the introduction would go.
Well, and I think a lot of my friends would feel comfortable saying, oh yeah, this is Vera's girlfriend. But I think it just all depends in Serbia on where you are. You know, where you are, what bar you are in. Because it's bar, you know, there are bars that where people that go there are more open, versus some other ones where, you know, you just would not even say anything.
So it's user discretion all the time.
Pretty much. So it's, you are scanning constantly that's, scanning for...
That's a lot of mental overhead, I guess, to have with you, because you've pretty much got to filter everything that you do or almost think, because you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you're compromising your safety, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I do that here, and I think I do it because of the environment that I grew up in and the fact that it was not okay to be gay. And I really do that all the time. So it's just something that's in the back of my mind, and I constantly think about. So I don't think that I'm ever 100%, you know, like 100% relaxed.
Well, we hope that here at Joy you can let your hair down a bit.
Yeah, I think you're fairly safe here.
You're pretty okay here.
Yes.
Yeah, I wonder if it's also partly the field of work you're in. You're a scientist. I'm also a scientist, and it's quite renowned as being a little bit conservative.
Yes.
Although people are thinking they're very liberal in some ways, they can be quite conservative in their attitudes to other things.
Yeah.
So I wonder, do you feel like you have to hide anything from that perspective?
Not really. So I have always, I have been in the same research team, I guess, for 17 years, and I've always felt comfortable just being myself, with my boss at the time, who is the co-group leader with me of our team now, and also with my colleagues. You know, I have always felt really, really comfortable. I have never had any issues at work. Nothing has come up. And I have to say that I now have three other people who are openly gay as part of my team. So that's really interesting, and it happened by chance. It wasn't a part of an interview, but it's quite cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. My partner's old team, they're all gay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So we knew before. The leader of the team isn't gay, but everyone else who works for her is. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's interesting how, you know, maybe people are drawn to a more open environment or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
So how do you think Serbia's changing these days from your perspective here? Like, you know, we've got marriage equality here, but Serbia's also making gains. Like the Pride Parade, I think, is becoming a bit more of a... Yeah. A thing?
Yes, well, you know, the Pride Parade is also seen as, I think, by a lot of actors and artists as a place to be seen these days, which I don't particularly like. But it doesn't matter. I think it's helping to build the mass, and I think that that is what is needed. And I think that once people realize, you know, nothing is really happening, people are moving along and nothing is really changing, they're not infecting anyone, you know, with the fact that they are gay, so yeah. That is fine.
How about with glitter? Do they have as much glitter as Sydney?
No, definitely not. It doesn't even come close to Sydney, but I think we're trying.
That certainly must be a positive, though, that people are striving to be seen in that scene. So even though, you know, it might be for appearances, that still is making a positive connection between the LGBTI community and everybody else, rather than saying, I wouldn't be caught dead at, you know, Pride.
Yeah, so it is really positive from that perspective. And I think that it also goes to the point of, you know, we are changing, Serbia's changing and changing politically as well. And I think that that is kind of connected. And I'm certainly happy to see that there were no incidents at the event last year in terms of people being injured and or hurt or anything like that.
Thanks so much for talking to us tonight, Vera, about Serbia, and the future is looking bright. You're listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
This is William calling from Wee Wee Blogs, and you are listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9. Let's do this!
And thank you tonight to Vera Ignatovic for talking to us about all things Serbian, Australian and handball. Thanks again to all the messages we've had over the week on Facebook from Sue, Anthony, Talia, Dylan, Yaz and a heap more.
And thanks to everyone behind the scenes, our podcaster Alex and our social media master Dean. And thanks Neil on the front desk. And coming up we have Urban Dreaming, stories of resilience, survival, connection with culture and spirituality, and followed by Triple Bypass.
And to cue us out tonight, we are listening to that song from the Serbian finale winner. Brilliant. Maria Serafovic with
Molitva.
And you can listen to our podcast next week, or our show next week, where we'll be talking all things Eurovision.
It's that time of year.
Oh, no.
You're listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Oh, Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.